This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
So I'm Adam Thornhill. I'm a programmer, and I have my background in programming and psychology. And what I've been trying to do over the past 15 years is to combine these two fields. So I look at our technical discipline from a psychological perspective.
This is a continuing episode of a series with Adam Thornhill about code as a crime scene. Now let me introduce a special guest.
My name is Len Gresky. I lead the architecture practice at Leading Agile, and my background is in high performance, high visibility, high risk e-commerce product development.
What was the worst piece of code that you ever had to remediate? What made it so bad, and what did you do to improve it?
Oh, well, it's a hard question to answer. I think the worst pieces of code I've ever seen haven't been remediated, simply because the risk of touching that code at all is so high. So what people tend to do is they build new features and just try to avoid touching that piece of code. But I've seen a lot of code that is extremely complicated. And as you know, I'm developing code analysis tools for a living. And in that capacity, I always look for extreme examples of code that so I can kind of push the limits of my tools. And a couple of years ago, I wrote a blog post about some of my experience. I called the blog post "The Day I Parsed a Monster." And it's about my analysis of gc.cpp, one of my favorite hotspots from the .NET Core runtime. It's the .NET garbage collector. And that piece of code is fascinating because it's a complex domain. The code obviously works, right? It's running on millions of laptops, but it's extremely complicated. It's some of the most complex code I've ever seen. And it's not only complex because the problem domain is hard. It's complex because the solution is complex. And what I think happens with that kind of code is that it works as on a barrier to contributions. It becomes really hard to look at that code and try to contribute or fix something yourself because the bar is so high. So that's one example that I think is interesting to look at.
You know, when you described earlier the a situation where the worst piece of code or a worst piece of code was one that wasn't actually remediated, but instead it sounds like features were being created in other areas or other new classes. It sounds like you're describing the strangler pattern. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, that's very much what I had in mind. Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, so that was actually a good remediation. I mean, that is a remediation strategy as well, is to leave the icky code there and try to, over time, make it so that you don't need it anymore because the functionality crops up in other areas.
Yeah, you basically brick it up like Chernobyl until the radiation dies down.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's an important pattern. Otherwise, my general strategy when dealing with these extreme hotspots is usually a divide and conquer approach. Because I think that refactoring complex code doesn't have to be complicated itself. Very often we can go a long way with very basic things like extract class, extract function. Because once we manage to isolate a piece of code, then it's usually much, much easier to start to improve it. So that's almost always where I start my refactoring journeys.
You know, one of the things that you alluded to with the number of people is, you know, earlier in the conversation is that in some ways that's a different kind of hotspot. Like the more people you have working on something, the more likely it is that it's going to smell bad.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, and that's sort of, so my background is I'm a sociologist. And so a lot of the problems that you see with bad code are people problems. Not so much that the people are bad. It's that the way that we work, is, you know, sort of rewards the wrong behaviors. And one of the things I like to talk about with my clients is that, you know, when you see firefighters in an organization, then, you know, literally they're the hot spots. And often behind every firefighter, there's an arsonist. And often at the C level, because I do a lot of C level coaching, that the most sophisticated firefighters actually moonlight as arsonists.
Yeah, that's very interesting observation.
And in my career, I've got examples of $50 million fires that we've put out or avoided through the better design. But doing that at the C level is really dangerous because you have to have very sophisticated indirect influence tactics in order to be able to put out a $50 million fire before it shows up in production.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. It's my experience too, that there is this super intimate link between software architecture and people. And I also think that what we're talking about is a little bit like Brooke's Law, right? Where, you know, the Mifkan Landmann, right? But it's also, I think, that any software system can accommodate a number of people, right? And they can be productive. You go beyond that number and you have a nightmare. But we also think that if you invest even more in architecture, then maybe you can broaden that and the system can accommodate a little bit more people. And, you know, the organization so can become more productive. But there is definitely some kind of limit where it just doesn't make sense to add more people to it, right?
And hard. That's right. I mean, you get to upper limit of the how much communication can happen, right?
Yeah. Super interesting.
Tell us about your company, CodeScene.
Yeah, so CodeScene is my startup. I founded a company back in 2015. And the reason I founded CodeScene was because the year before I had written the first edition of Your Code's Crime Scene, where I basically described all these techniques I've been using as a consultant over the years. I wanted to share them with the larger community. But after writing that book, I kind of realized that if I want these techniques to become mainstream, there has to be really, really good tooling around it. So that was my main motivation for founding CodeScene. So CodeScene today is, we have grown. We're not a big company, but we're a little bit larger than we were back then. We are roughly 30 people now. And we develop a CodeScene tool, which automates all these analyses from your Coder's Crime Scene and also adds some new exciting things like the code health metric, trends, measures of unplanned work, all the stuff we have been talking about today. So CodeScene is available for anyone who wants to try it.
Let me add to that. So if my memory serves, if you have a public-facing GitHub, you can run CodeScene against it. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, you can use, if you have a public-facing GitHub, you can use CodeScene for free forever. If you have a private repository or you have a repositories in your own data center, then you can try CodeScene for free for 2 weeks. So you can visualize your code, you can measure your code health, and if you find it useful, then you can sign up for our subscription and continue to use it on private repos too.
It's always funny, people on the show sometimes feel like apologetic that they have to charge money for their services, but we all support sustainability on the show, so that requires a business model. Now, that means your situation is you want to get paying customers. So for people who are listening to this show, what kinds of problems are happening in their world where they should get in touch with you? Or maybe said another way, what is your ideal customer? What are the symptoms they're experiencing and how can you help them?
I like to think that if you are in the situation where you know that there are parts of your code or parts of your design that are lacking and you kind of need to sell the need for refactoring or larger improvements to management, then CodeScene will be your friend. It will help you communicate that message. And it will help you get the time you need to do what you have to do. Another situation could also be that you're working on a large code base where you might not have all the insights you need. Perhaps you inherited that code or you're a newcomer. Then CodeSync can help you to quickly understand where the critical parts are in the code and how that solution fits together. And finally, if you happen to be in a technical leadership position or an engineering management position, then CodeSync will help you get the most out of your code and your team. So in any of those situations, please consider to have a look at CodeSync.
Is your business model primarily tool-based, or do you also offer services for responding to what's discovered in CodeSync?
So it's almost exclusively a product company. We do a few services every now and then, but we're basically a subscription company. So you buy CodeSync, and what we try to do is all the stuff we traditionally could have done with the service model is something we try to build and automate into the product. So with CodeSync, you're not only getting this, you know, one-off analysis. Once you connect CodeSync can also go in and serve automated reviews on pull requests or directly in your IDE when you write the code, so that you can discover unhealthy code super, super early and also get the insights into how to fix technical debt that is already there directly in your IDE.
And how do they find CodeSync, or how do they find you?
They go to codesync.com. That's also where you can start a free trial. And if you want to get in touch with me, the best channel is probably on Twitter or LinkedIn. I'm Adam Thornhill at Twitter. So I'm Adam Thornhill. I'm a programmer and I have my background in programming and psychology. And what I've been trying to do over the past 15 years is to combine these two fields. So I look at our technical discipline from a psychological perspective. And I've written a couple of books about this intersection of people and code. The best known one is probably Your Code as a Crime Scene. I'm based in Sweden, and I'm the founder and CTO of CodeSync, a company that helps you make sense of large code bases and help you remediate technical debt and reap all the benefits of healthy code. So if you want to learn more about all this stuff that we talk about today, and you could probably do worse than checking out the new edition of Your Code's Crime Scene, which I'm really, really excited about. It's already available as an ebook and will be available in print format in January 2024.
Check out the show notes, and in there you will see links to the several books that Adam Thornhill is an author of about code and design. And also you'll find links to other things such as Adam's talk at GoTo and his TEDx talk. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy tapping. If you don't use a podcast player, well, go back to the website where you downloaded this MP3, and there you will see the show notes. This is the last episode of Your Code as a Crime Scene with Adam Thornhill. The first of this series started in episode 261. So if you're like my friend Zoe, you can find that episode by going back to the Agile Thoughts website at agilethoughts.info, and there you will find a search box where you can type in any episode number that you desire, and it will find it.